So this is week two, God willing, of two, because really we want to start Shemitah Kesafim next week. But we're talking about the issue of dealing with the chashud, with the person who is suspected of violating Shemitah, and the question of what I'm allowed to provide for him that he may use for further violation of Shemitah. So last week, we started out by explaining what Lifnei Iver is in the context of the Mishnayos of the fifth parak of Shavuos, as well as broader context as well. So we said that if your contribution to this person's chayt is accessible, well, the first point that we made was even if the person is going to do something that he knows is bad for him, so you say, well, he's not an iver. Nonetheless, the Rambam's language in his parish of Mishnayos reflects the idea that that if he's blinded by desire, that makes him blind also. So therefore, it's not an excuse. You can't say it's not lifnei iver just because he knew that it was the wrong thing to do. That was our first point. Second point was that the Gemara, based on the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, where it is, where it is chat ibra denaro, meaning where the chote, the sinner, is on the same side of the river as the sin. In other words, you didn't make it more accessible to him than it already was, then you are not liable for lifnei iver. We discussed various applications of it. We also discussed limitations. One potential limitation of that heter is that if the other option for him to get the chet is another Jew providing it, then perhaps the it is still called lifnei iver. That was one. Another possible limitation was that it's only where the chet is as accessible to him via the other resources as it is from you. So the case we gave was the case in which you're providing non-kosher meat to somebody who isn't Jewish, and now he marries a Jewish woman, and the question is, can you still provide him with the non-kosher meat? He'll say, well, he can get non-kosher meat anywhere. That's true. Nonetheless, what you're giving is free, or on a tab, or whatever it is, a better deal, and therefore it is you are still subject to lifnei iver, and we discussed more within that. We then pointed out the issue of lifnei de lifnei. If I do something that causes another Jew to violate lifnei iver, that is also wrong. Whereas with a non-Jew, the non-Jew has no mitzvah lifnei iver, and therefore I'm allowed to provide him with the means to then cause somebody else to sin, theoretically. And then the last bit, which we're going to spend quite a bit of time on today, is the issue of misayaya. You're going to come around this side, it's fine. We had said that in addition to the biblical prohibition of lifnei iver l'sita mishal, not to cause people to stumble, we also have a derabanan, which is misayaya, that you're not allowed to help people to sin, and we said it may be a function of lifnei iver, it may be a function of arevus, kol yisrael areven zeh lazeh, it may be a function of my mitzvah of tochacha. We'll see more about that today. It could be any of the above. But we said there are limiting factors to my liability for misayaya. We said it's only if I'm actually helping the person to sin that I am liable, not if I provide a background step. So, for example, we gave the case, which is going to come up again today, if I rent a store to somebody who's going to keep it open on Shabbos. But I'm not helping him to keep his store open on Shabbos. I just gave him the space in which he functions. So that's not a violation of misayaya. And then a second point, which we will come back to today also, is the potential mitigating factor if my help is before the avera itself as opposed to during the avera. And we noted the Mishnah in Shavuos that said that I'm allowed to lend a sifter, or I'm allowed to lend some kind of tool that would be used for grinding up grain to somebody who is suspected of violating Shemitah. That I'm allowed to do. But I'm not allowed to sift with that person, to grind with that person, because then I'm helping during the Avera itself. And then the last distinction to be made, also we're going to come back to today, is the possibility that there's no problem with Misayaya if I'm dealing with a mumar, somebody who has rejected Torah. Maybe I have no mitzvah of separating him from Averos. So those are all things that I'm going to come back to in the course of today's discussion. But that's lifnei iver and misayaya as the broad categories. Clear so far? I mean, that was a 3-minute summary of an hour. But The questions I want to deal with today are the following. Number one, who is considered to be suspected when it comes to Shemitah? An Am Haaretz, a random person, are they considered to be suspected when it comes to Shemitah? This is a very Shemitah-specific issue. That's number one. Number two, a broader question. If I'm going to provide an item that can be used for a prohibited purpose to somebody who, in fact, is suspected of violating that mitzvah that's involved, so am I allowed to say, yeah, but there are other things he could do with that item. Maybe he won't use the item in a prohibited way. So, for example, can I give food to somebody who I know doesn't recite brachos? So am I able to be told? Can I be told and say, maybe he's going to hand the food to somebody else? Maybe he'll say a bracha. I don't know. To give a little bit of a different case, but it's the same category, can I invite somebody for a Shabbos meal when I know that he lives a mile away and he normally drives on Shabbos? He could walk. It's walking distance. That's a mile is this method of measurement that we use elsewhere. 1 point something kilometers. And then the last question of, does the argument of Chad Ibra the Nahra help with Misayeya? The argument of, we're on the same side of the river, the item is accessible to him, will that help in the issue of Misayeya, of assisting somebody to do an Avera? So the two classic examples, I've mentioned them before, one is selling a ticket to somebody for a flight that's going to be on Shabbos. So you are Misayeya, but on the other hand, he could get a ticket somewhere else. Or, the case in the Tzitz Eliezer, if I perform an ultrasound on a woman, that's going to enable them to do an abortion, right? And is that a Misayeya problem? Or do I say, so if it's not me, some other technician will do the ultrasound? So those are the cases that I want to get to. I had wanted to really do a lot of Darkei Shalom discussion also, but there's just no room. There's too much in this year already. So at some point we have to discuss the issues of Darkei Shalom and how those function as mitigating factors in these situations. Okay. So the first question, is an Am Haaretz considered to be chashud when it comes to Shemitah? Do we suspect him automatically that he would violate Shemitah? So we know that I am allowed to sell potential isurim, potentially prohibited items, to a person if he is not chashud. Okay? In other words, I have farming equipment. Somebody comes to me during Shemitah and he says, I'd like to buy a plow. But on the other hand, he's somebody who's known to be someone who's careful about mitzvahs. So, and careful about Shemitah even. So then the rule is, I am allowed to sell him that piece of farming equipment. If you're looking at the source sheet that I sent out for today, I sent out as a separate sheet, not tacked on to the one from the previous week. So it's source Aleph. The Mishnah in Shavuos says, Elu kelim she'ein ha'uman rashai l'mochrem b'Shavuos, the following implements may not be sold in Shemitah, Machareisha b'chol keleha, plows and all of their different tools, ha'ol, the yoke, the mizra, the winnowing fan, the decker, the spade, those are hardcore farming equipment. Avol, mocher hu magal yadu magal katsir, I'm allowed to sell him the scythe, the sickle, right, the wagon, those things I'm allowed to sell because, as the Mishnah concludes, it's not meyucha la'avera. Those things could be used with hefker items during Shemitah. They're not used for working in the ground. So as long as it has a permitted purpose, I can sell it. If it does not have a permitted purpose, I am not allowed to sell it. However, the Rambam writes on that Mishnah in Source Beis, the prohibition against selling hardcore farming items in Shemitah is specifically if I'm selling it to somebody who is suspected of violating Shemitah. But I can sell it to somebody who is not suspected. Why? Because he's keeping it for next year. He knows that my farming equipment is on sale during Shemitah because I have no business. So he's going to buy it now for next year. So I'm good. If he's not a nechshad, if he's not a chashud, we use the term nechshad and chashud as equivalent. If he's not suspected of wrongdoing, then it's fine. How far do we go with that? Will he really say ein sof? I can do whatever I want in providing the means for sin to a person who is not suspected of normally violating Shemitah and not have to be concerned that maybe something's wrong? So the Nimuke HaGriv argues that you may not. He's commenting to a Mishnah in Shavuos, Hey, Zayim, it's Source Gimel. He says, Be'eno chashud tolin bazeh. when you're dealing with somebody who is not suspected of violating Shemitah, then we are Tola. We do this Taliyah. We depend on the idea that he's going to use it properly. In brackets, I added the words, do like Kona Lashana Haba, that maybe he's buying it for next year, like the Rabbam had said. Mishumachi kan abdiyad inan dilokeach kahe kadeh shemen. So therefore, in the case here, in the case that he's commenting on, is where we said that I am a barrel maker. I want to sell barrels to people who are bringing in their wine and their oil. At a certain point, maybe I should worry that they have wine and oil that is coming from Shemitah produce. So we capped it. We said 15 barrels of this and 5 barrels of that, and that's your max. So he says, I am allowed to do that up to the 5 barrels of oil. Adayin ainu beberu shiyavim in a hefker, because it's not yet clear that he's going to bring from hefker, that he's going to bring something inappropriate. I'm sorry, it is not known for sure that he's going to bring something that is appropriate from Hefker. Mikomakom talinan kevin shu shava b'shava. But it's a 50-50 possibility that what he's bringing is fine until he gets to the 5 barrel point. Masha'in came below keach kav kadim. But if he brings 20 barrels, hagam shenucha lo mashiyavi hey kadim shemen v'tesav kadim yayin. It could be 5 of them are going to be for oil and 15 are going to be for wine, which is indeed the cap. That's the maximum where we say I'm okay. Mikamakom bazeh yesh beis stadim le'isr ve'echal heter. But at that point, you have 2 reasons to argue that it's aser, and only 1 reason to argue that it is mutter. Shema rotza kulam l'shemen oleyayin. Because maybe all of them are for oil, or them for wine, as the Yerushalmi in fact asks. And then it says no, because 15, the oil and wine barrels are different. Right? The point is that the Yerushalmi asks the question, when you bring 20 barrels, maybe you have to worry. You'll tell me, but he's not chashud. I'm okay. And so what he says is, the fact that the Yerushalmi asks this question teaches me that that's not true. There is a limit on my credibility. There's a limit to being able to say that this is fine. Once I hit a point where I've gone too far and the Taliyah is too unlikely, we don't do that anymore. Clear?
This is still for somebody stuck. If you know somebody...
This is a non-chashur.
But is there a third level of somebody chashur? Is there not chashur? Is there chashur, not chashur, and then, he's just a little bit...
Well, there's chashur there.
Right. So, none is...
Oh, you mean eino chashud would be different from chashur?
Yes,
I think that is shayach, although I haven't actually seen anyone break out chavrus. I saw the discussion a little bit in the Derech Emunah, a little bit in the Chazon Ish. And I can't believe that it's physically impossible for you to actually sell someone these items. Like, we're at a hard stop, no matter what. So, in that sense, I would have to say yes. The problem is that there are other people who are in the intermediate category. We're now going to discuss the Am Ha'aretz and the unknown person. So the Am Ha'aretz, and again, we're not naming names. But the Am Ha'aretz, what's the person's status? Meaning, I have somebody who is not generally careful about Truma and Meiser. He's not necessarily careful about generally careful about Truma and Tahara. What do I have to think when he comes to me and wants to buy a plow during Shemitah? So the Rambam writes in Shemitah V'Yovel Perek Ches, later in Perek Ches, Halach Yigimli Yudalit, it's source Dalit. The rule for Truman Meiser is that items require Truman Meiser if they fit 3 qualifications. Qualification number one is that they are ochel, they are food. Number 2, I'm doing them out of order for the sake of this. Number 2 is gidula min akarka, it grows from the ground. And number 3 is nishmar. It is something that people guard. Okay, something that people actually guard. I suppose it's something that just grows wild, and maybe they'll eat it once it's there, but they don't actually grow it. They don't cultivate it. So the rule is that if you have an item that does not have liability for Meiser, because it's not Nishmar, because it's not something people grow, then it's also not going to be a problem for Sfichin in Shemitah. Right? In Shemitah, we have a Gezerah that says that which grows wild is off limits, because of concern that the farmer's going to cultivate it and claim that it grew wild. However, if you have something that really does just grow wild and no one ever plants it, then I don't have that concern. The prohibition against Sfichin will not apply. And therefore, the Rambam writes, you can buy them from anybody during Shemitah. They don't have Shemitah status. Not Midoraisa, not Midorabanan. They're clean. Halacha Yedalid, he writes, when is this true? If we're talking about buying it from just a general person. But if someone is suspected of doing business in Shemitah produce, or he's going to guard his produce and then sell it, we will not buy anything from him at all. Clear? What the Rambam said is clear? The Rambam has said two things. If it's something I know for sure is not subject to Shemitah, I can buy it from anybody, assuming that he is an Am Haaretz Stam. If he's a Chashud, if he's suspected of violating Shemitah, then I can't even do that. Right? What the Rambam has now taught me, though, is that if I'm dealing with somebody who is a Stam Adam, the only thing I'm allowed to buy from him is this thing which I know is not subject to Shemitah. But if it's something that I know is subject to Shemitah, it's carrots, then I'm not allowed to buy it from the Stam Am Haaretz. Right? Why am I not allowed to buy the carrots from him? What's wrong with me buying the carrots from him? I'm allowed to buy things. What's wrong with me buying carrots from him? And so what? The Rambam believes that Nishmar is mutter.
Shamar Shvi'is is mutter.
Yeah. What's the problem? The problem is that I'm going to encourage him in his chait. The problem is I'm going to give him Shemitah money that he is now going to misuse. Right? That's my concern. And so what we're saying is that the Am Haaretz is suspected that he would in fact do something wrong. Rav Chaim Kanievsky in Source Hay, in his Derech Amuna, on Bamed the Bamamur and Bamaretz Stam, says, She'ein yadua im hu chashud al shviyas ola. We're dealing with somebody we don't know whether he's suspected or not. The letter Kufnen Hay should not be read as the word Kana, it's a footnote. The Hine Nechlekua, we've shown him. That's a machlok. As we've shown him, the Das Rabbeinu, the view of our master, meaning the Rambam, is the Stam Am Haaretz Chashud Al HaShviyas. Is that indeed an Am Haaretz, unknown to us in any other way, is suspected of violating Shemitah? We just don't go so far as to say, Mikomakom lo kansu, komo b'chashud vada. We're not going to find him and say, you can't buy anything from him. You could buy 3 meals worth of food from him. That we will allow you to do. Dot, dot, dot. Okay.
Doesn't talk about wild products. Wild products.
But that also I'd be allowed to buy from him, yes. So that's the Rambam's position. The Rambam's position is the Am Haaretz is assumed to violate Shemitah. However, other Rishonim disagree.
Is it all still within the Kedivir?
Yeah, well, the Kedivir will be part of it. Yeah.
It's not this could theoretically be Lifnei and not Messiah.
Oh, you mean in terms of that? Right. It will be Lifnei Iver rather than Messiah. I believe so. Right. There are reasons why you could argue it, but I think so. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Tam, Ramban, and Ritva say no. Astam Am Haaretz is not suspected of violating Shvius. And I brought you, Rabbeinu Tam, as the example of it. I'd rather go through all of them. If you want to see the others, Ramban is Chulin Vav Amud Aleph, the Ritva is in Gittin Samach Aleph Amud Aleph. But Rabbeinu Tam was a good example, based on Mishnah and Bechoros. That's what he's basing himself on. But take a look at the Gemara he's commenting on first, Source Vav. The Gemara in Ksubos. Hachamarish nechnesu le'ir. Right? Donkey drivers come into the city with produce. Va'amar echad mehen shalich chadash v'shachaviri yashan. One says, my stuff is new, and the other guy's stuff is old. Or, my stuff has not been tithed, the other guy's stuff has been tithed. Eino naman. We don't believe him. The impression we get from this discussion is that what he's saying is, the other guy's stuff is better than my stuff. And yet we don't believe him, and the reason we don't believe him is because we worry that they have a scam between the two of them, right? They've each come to town, and in one town, A praises B's stuff, and the other town, B praises A's stuff. And that's the way they do business. It's a game. So we don't trust him to do that. Rabbi Yehuda says, Naaman. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, he is credible. So the question is, when he said, my stuff is new, and the other guy's stuff is old, how was he praising the other guy's stuff? What was he saying about the other guy's stuff that was positive? What could it mean in halachic terms? That was the other line. Mitukan and Eino Mitukan. Right, so one possibility is to put in a Shemitah context. And indeed, they bring the source that we had the other week about the rose. And Chadash and Yashan there is quoted in this Tosfos. I skipped it here, but it's within the same Tosfos and source Zion. He first quotes you Rashi. Rashi says that maybe it's about the Omer. It's Chadash versus Yashan, meaning my stuff has not yet passed through a Karban Omer, and therefore my grain is off limits as Chadash, and his stuff is Yashan, it's already old. Then he brings a second approach, which is the Rashba, which is the Shemitah one. And the Rashba says, what he's saying is, my stuff is new, meaning it's now Shemitah, and my stuff is Shemitah produce. His stuff is old, it's from year 6, and therefore it's okay.
Why is he bringing it in?
Because he's selling it to non-Jews. Yeah. So, the answer could be that he has a lot of different goods, and he says, oh, this stuff you don't want, this stuff is Shemitah stuff. You know, there are all sorts of ways you can color the case. But Rabbeinu Tam says, that's nonsense. Ve'ei Nira L'Rabbeinu Tam, it's in the middle of the Tosfos in Sur Zayin, I'm skipping for time. He says, Ve'ei Nira L'Rabbeinu Tam, D'stam Ame Ha'aretz Lo Nech Shedu HaShavi'is. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, we don't assume that an Ame Ha'aretz violates Shemitah. D'stam Aparakat Kama, he quotes you a Mishnah in Becharos. Ha'chashar Al HaMaiser, I added in the word Sheni. If a person is suspected of treating Maiser Sheni improperly, Eino Chashar Al HaShavi'is. That does not mean we assume that he would treat Shemitah improperly, and vice versa. Alma d'stamein and chashud d'mishviyas. So Rabbeinu Tam says, you see that our assumption walking in is that you're not suspected of violating Shemitah. Otherwise, whether you violate Maaser Sheni or not, you will be suspected of violating Shemitah. So Rabbeinu Tam disagrees, as does the Ritva, as does the Ramban. So that's a machlokes about the Am Haaretz. What about somebody who's unknown to you altogether? You have a store. Some guy walks into your store. He's not known to you at all. Do you have to worry that maybe he is an Am Haaretz who is violating Shemitah? Do you have to ascertain it? Do you have to ask him, excuse me, can you show me your chaver card? Like, what do you do? So, the Derech Amunah, Chaim Kanievsky writes in Source Ches, he says, Ulekulei Alma, according to everybody, im ein yadua mativo, if you don't know this fellow's nature, asur limsor lo d'mei shvius, you're not allowed to give him Shemitah money, because you will then be causing him to sin. V'tzarech levarer miu, you have to find out who he is, k'dei lahatir limsor lo d'mei shvius, in order to permit him to handle Shemitah money. Ulahalacha naktinam lechumra. As a matter of halacha, we are strict. D'stam amar es chashur ala shmi is like the Rambam, that we do assume he is suspected. Ubizman hazeh, by an amaretz, not where you don't know whether he's an amaretz or not. Ubizman hazeh, today he says, she'en lanu chaverim shekiblu elu she'kiblu. We don't have any such thing as chaver status today. There is no such thing. There's a nice discussion in the Chazanish about how to resurrect the chaver status in our day. But he says right now there's no such thing. So elu she'en ben chisios haniskaran v'perakir b'meiser b'derech emunah sipkat an aleph v'nizharim b'iser shviyas ne'eman an aleha v'koshkin emugamir v'savir. So he says, nowadays, a person would be credible if he doesn't have any of the deficiencies that Derech Emunah lists for us in Hilchos Meiser, which I brought you in source tests. You'd have it available to you to read it if you want to know how you can get out of the category of the suspected Am Haaretz. So you have to learn Torah. You have to be Mishamish Tamidei Chachamim. You have to wear tefillin and tzitzis and say Shema. And so there's a list here of what you need in order to have credibility. It's a fun discussion in its own right, especially because of the bracketed comments. You have to read the bracketed comments there. That's what adds the value. Okay, but that's all in terms of very Shemitah-specific rules. I want to talk more globally, even though there's more we could say about Jews being suspected for Shemitah and the Gemara Gittin Daf Nun Gimel Amud Beis and Nadalev and Aleph. There's a lot you could say, but I want to get to the issues that are more global and more practical in terms of what comes up, not just once every 7 years. So, am I allowed to rely on Taliyah versus Lifnei Iver? Can I assume he's going to use it in the right way? If I'm providing an item to somebody who is suspected of violating halacha. So, for example, inviting somebody for the Shabbos meal, right, where he's a mile away, he could walk, but he normally drives on Shabbos. Giving food to someone who I know doesn't recite brachos, maybe he's going to give the food to somebody else. Or maybe he will recite a bracha this time. So first of all, in order to get this, we should understand the nature of Talia at all. What does it mean? When I say that I'm going to be tole on somebody, that I'm going to rely on the possibility that he's going to do it right, why does that work at all within halacha? The Mishnah Rishona asks the question on in his comments to Shavi's Hey Vav. I didn't retype it again. This working with this new computer is very frustrating. But you look it up, and the Mishnah Rishona in Shavi's Hey Vav, he asks the question. He says, Lifnei Iver is a biblical prohibition. Right? Lifnei Iver lo sitein mershol qualifies as a deoraisa. It is a biblical prohibition. So why should I be allowed to say, yeah, but maybe he's going to use it for a good purpose? That's called safek deoraisa. And the rule is, we go, l'chumra, we should be strict. So what is this whole concept of being tola and saying, well, I think he's going to use it for a good purpose? Who gave you the right to do that? That's the Mishnah Rishona's question. So I want to bring you four answers, two from the Mishnah Rishona, but two that are not from the Mishnah Rishona, because they're very important answers to teach us the way that Talia works. So the first answer I'm going to bring you is from Rav Avadya Yosef, in his Yechavadaz, Gimel Samach Zayin. His question he's addressing is the following. Am I allowed to own a clothing store in which I sell shirts that are sleeveless? I'm selling to women. And the question is, if they walk around like that, they're potentially in violation, depending on where they walk, they're in violation, or causing men to violate various prohibitions. So it's like, it's lifnei to lifnei, is it an isser for them, is it an isser for the men? How I parse the isser isn't my concern right now. Rav Avadya assumes that there's a problem of lifnei iver l'sitein michshol in selling these items. And he discusses whether it's lifnei iver, whether it's misayaya, right? Maybe it's not lifnei iver because they could buy this, you know, if I shut down my store, there are 100 other stores they can go to. So maybe it's not lifnei iver, maybe it's misayaya, but it's before the avera takes place and so on and so forth. But then he discusses talia, and that's the point that I wanted to focus on in source yud. Ulam yeshmakom litzadev lahatir benidon didan. He says there is room to be lenient in our case. Lefi mashenogos nashim rabos lovosh chulza im sharvulin mitachas lesimla shehi beli sharvulin. He says many women have the practice of taking a sleeveless shirt and wearing it over something that has sleeves. Right? And this is a phenomenon you can see. In other words, they'll take the vest or whatever it is, and they'll put it on over a shirt that has sleeves. So therefore, they're not non-senua. V'lifamim gam me'ala simla. They may wear it over a dress. V'im kein ein adavar barur klal shenase iser kol shil v'mechira simla lo shar v'lim. So maybe there's nothing wrong when you sell them this item. They're planning on wearing it in a fine way. Maybe she intends, in fact, to wear a shirt with sleeves underneath it. This is the key. The Ritva says that if I'm not giving him the Isser, and maybe he will not encounter any Isser, there is no issue of Lifnei Iver. Lifnei Iver does not apply. In other words, what he's trying to tell me, that's very important, is that the reason why Talia works, because that's what this is a Talia. The reason why Talia works is because Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol means, by definition, don't put a stumbling block in front of him where you know that he's going to trip. Once you don't know that that will be the result of your actions, it's not called lifnei iver.
So what is a suffix lifnei iver for the ritva? If that item itself is a suffix?
I don't know. He's saying there's no such thing.
So they're saying it's a suffix d'oraita. By saying there's a suffix on this d'oraita, there's no more d'oraita.
Correct. It's not the iser doesn't exist right in a case of suffix. You know what it's like? It's not a deoraisa case, but it's like Arla in Chutz La'aretz. Arla in Chutz La'aretz, that's it. And Arla exists, but once I'm not sure whether it's Arla, then it's not Arla. Yeah, that's in a Hanami, but that's the way he is taking this. That's my point.
Just to go back to what Avadia's point, is he making a blanket rule for this, meaning that if someone has a store and someone not Sanua comes and walks in and buys the shirt, you can be fairly certain that, you know, that's not a real Talia then?
But then he'll say there's no suffix.
Right. So.
But if there's no suffix, then yes, then your taliyah disappears.
Right, and then you can't do it.
I suspect that's what he would say. But that's the statement. I'm not 100% sure that's what he would say, but that's
or
what...
Maybe you can rely on the taliyah that he's going to... That person will
give it to
a friend.
Else.
Yeah.
The question really is...
Take it to an infinite...
Right.
I mean, well, that's what the Nimukya Griff didn't like before. The thing is, you could still argue the other pieces that he brings, that it's Chadib or Denara, because they could buy it somewhere else, and that it's not Masayah, maybe because it's before the event. And, like, there are ways, potentially. I just wanted to show you that explanation of Taliyah, which is really strange. There are three other explanations I want to bring. The second one I want to bring is from the Mishnah Rishona himself. And he says that the Lifnei Iver concern is not really a De'oraisa concern. For one of two reasons. Either because you're familiar with the idea that the Rambam says that that suffix De'oraisa l'chumra is itself a De'raban. Right? This is a classic issue. When you deal with Isurim derabanan, and we say Savit derabanan lakula, Savit deraisa lachumra, right? I'll take a second to walk it through because it's worth it. What is it that empowers the rabbanan to create rabbinic prohibitions in the first place? Why are the rabbanan able to do that and it be binding on us? So the Gemara says it's because the Torah says lo sasur mikolad deber mashir mulachayim inu small. The Torah says don't stray from whatever they tell you. The Rambam says that's your source for derabanans, leading commentators to ask, well, in that case, every derabanan is a deoraisa, right? It's lezasser. Every derabanan is then a deoraisa, to which the Rambam could shrug and say, okay. But the problem is, if it's true that every derabanan is a deoraisa, then why is it when you have a doubt about a deoraisa, you're strict, and when you have a doubt about a derabanan, you're lenient? All your derabanans are deoraisas, and therefore you should have to be strict across the board. So one approach, I think it's the Mabit and the Kiryat Sefer, is to say that the truth is, if you have a suffix on anything, de'oraisa or de'rabanan, you should be able to go lakula, to be lenient. However, the rule that says suffix de'oraisa l'chumra is a rabbinically created rule to distinguish between biblicals and rabbinics. Okay? The rule that suffix de'oraisa l'chumra is itself a de'rabanan.
The Rambam himself doesn't say that, does he?
No. But that would mean that maybe this Lifnei Iver concern is not really De'oraisa. Or alternatively, he suggests another angle. He says maybe Lifnei Iver that's biblical is really only like you put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. Giving somebody the means to sin may only be a derabanan asmachta to Lifnei Iver. That's a weak answer, and he acknowledges that that's not what it sounds like. The Sifri doesn't sound like that.
Right, he doesn't have the literal...
Yeah.
The Shuto Shomei.
Yeah. Understand. But that's another angle on why you could be Tola. So again, the first reason why you could be Tola is because you'll say, if it's a suffix, it's not Lifnei Iver. The second reason why you could be Tola is because you're Tzliya... is because the concern is not a biblical concern here. Let me just say it that way. The third reason why you could be Tola, says the Mishnah Rishona, also, is that Taliyah works only if you're in tandem with Chad Ibra Dinahara, where the Isser was available to them from some other source. Since the Isser was already available to them from some other source, besides me, it's not really Lifnei Iver. And then I'm allowed to use the Safik. Well, maybe they'll do something else with it. You follow? So that will work for the inviting him for dinner case. The only way he's getting to dinner with me, right, is getting to dinner with me. In other words, there's no other source that he get it from. All I have is my suffix. But then, that's the third approach. And then the last approach to Taliyah is the Chazon Ish. And the Chazon Ish, again, I wasn't able to retype it in this using this computer, unfortunately, so I'm going to read it out to you, but it's a very important Chazon Ish to be aware of. He says that if you're going to be strict and not rely on this doubt because you want to prevent a Mirshol, you're going to cause Mirshol in other areas. by doing this. If you're going to be strict and say, well, I won't make him stumble here, you will make him stumble there. Why? So this is what he has to say in Yud Beis Tes. He says, Venira, the fact that the Chachamim were lenient, the case of doubt, even though you're not allowed to put a potential doubt, a potential stumbling block in front of a blind person, and therefore you should be strict, is because mishum diimbanu lahachmer b'sfekos nami nase michshol shenimna chesed v'darkei chayim v'shalom me'atzmeinu u'mehem. He says the result of being strict regarding this doubt is that we will create another stumbling block. We will prevent chesed. We'll prevent life. We'll prevent peace from ourselves and from them. He says, this person is an Am Haaretz. He doesn't know any better. I have an obligation to give him life. I have an obligation to be good to him. Certainly I should not be causing enmity between myself and them. Right? I'm going to say, I'm not inviting him for a Shabbos meal. He knows that I've invited everybody else in his circle for a Shabbos meal. I'm not going to invite him because, you know, he may walk. He may drive, I mean. He may walk? Yeah, but that's only a suffix. That's great. And now what I've done is I've caused him to hate me and to hate observant Jews who won't invite him for a Shabbos meal when they invite everybody else. That's going to be the result of what I've done. I've created a michshol on another front.
Why should Darkei Shalom override a biblical violation?
It's not Darkei Shalom. It's the opposite. It's not a Darkei Shalom leniency. It's, I am effectively, if you're familiar with the story about that they tell about Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, I'm not Mekil on Hilchos Shabbos, I'm Machmir on Pikuach Nefesh, right? He's saying, I'm not Mekil on Lifnei Iver, I'm Machmir on Lifnei Iver. I'm not Mekil on Lifnei Iver by saying, I'm not Mekil on Lifnei Iver by saying, I don't worry about causing him to drive. I worry about causing him to hate other Jews. Which is also an isser.
What is that drive on?
I'm 95% sure he's going to drive on Shabbat, and I'm 5% sure that if I don't invite him, he's going to hate other Jews. So.
See, start balancing your tlios.
Right.
But he says, he continues, he's very strong in this regard. He says, oh, here you go. But over in Al Lo Sisna. That was a good one. The Va'od Kamalavin. So there. The She'ein Isurun Kalme Isur Zesh Anuboyan Lahatil Osa Mimenu. The other things that he's going to violate are no less than that which I think I'm saving him from now. Now, whether that's true in Hilchos Shabbos is a good question. Hilchos Shabbos is very strict. That's a life and death. The
goes up separately. Each law that he could potentially be over on. Is it separate Lifnei Iver versus my Shemitah Lifnei Iver?
That's an interesting potential argument. And he continues to say, V'af limkor la'akum kein, shigam hein muzharin ala shalom am Yisrael. He says, even selling to a non-Jew. Non-Jews are not supposed to hate us either. They're supposed to be at peace with us also. So causing enmity from non-Jews to us is also a problem. And he quotes the Gemara Moikatan. He says, in case you think I'm making this up, because it sounds awfully funny, there's a Gemara in Moikatan, you know, you're familiar with this, B'makeh B'no Gadol, right? The Gemara says that, leave aside the question of whether hitting your child is ever a good idea, but it says if you hit a child who's already an adult, he's going to hit you back. You are now violating Lifnei Iver, because you're causing him to hit his parent. So there's an example of being concerned about Lifnei Iver, of that variety. So he says, that's why they said, you can sell him these items. You can sell him these items if you're not sure he would use it to sin, right? And that's everyone's question about the 95 and 5. If you're not sure, then you can sell it to him. If you are sure that he's going to use it for an aveira, then don't sell it to him, because then you haven't saved him from anything. But that's his point, and that's his basis for Taliyah. So we have four different reasons why Taliyah works. The first approach, Rav Avadya says, Lifnei Iver doesn't exist if you're not sure he's going to violate. Mishnah Rishona's argument, number one, is Lifnei Iver's concern is not really a De'oraisa. the Livneiver concern that's involved is not really a D'oraisa. Second argument that he brought is that you can use Taliyah where the item was available to him anyway, so therefore I'm not really violating Livneiver when I make it available to him. And then the last argument is the Chazon Ish, saying that you're just going to create other problems of Mikshol.
What? How are two and three different?
Yeah, but that's not true for all. In other words, his first approach is to say Lifnei Iver in general of causing Averos is not the D'oraisa.
His first approach, I mean, wait a minute, the second answer we said was that whenever it's D'rabbanan, we'll be told.
No, the second answer is that in general, leading to Chet is a D'rabbanan aspect of Lifnei Iver across the board. Lifneiver de'oraisa is not causing someone to sin. Lifneiver de'oraisa is making somebody physically stumble.
That was the second approach. We said two approaches.
You mean within the idea that Rambam says that Savi D'Arasil Chumra?
Yeah.
But also, that'll be across the board on Lifneiver, not limited to the case of Chadi Berdinara. His other approach... Oh, you were... When you're distinct... Those two are the same. I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you were saying. The first approach in general, the first global approach, is Rav Avadya.
Yeah.
Lifneiver doesn't apply to Safek.
Correct.
The second approach of Mishnah Rishona is that Lifneiver, the concern here is not really a D'oraisa, which has two sub-explanations.
Right.
One of which is that Safek D'oraisa L'chumra is itself rabbinic, and the other being that that leading to Chet is a D'rabbanan aspect of Lifneiver.
Now we put number three in that same category. Because number three, what we're saying number three, is when you combine it with Charav Redinara, then we're allowed to be Tovah.
Right, the thing is...
That's another element of making it D'rabbanan?
Yeah, but it's only for some Lifneiver cases. Not for all Lifneiver cases. It'll only be where it's Charav Redinara.
But why? Why?
Because Charav Redinara means I didn't put the Mikshol in front of him. The Mikshol was there anyway. Right, Chadi Berdinara means the sinner and the sin are on the same side of the river already.
I'd be like the tank top one.
Sorry?
I'd be like the tank top one where you could just go next door and buy.
Exactly, correct. Right. Mention and wear them either, but yes. That's the idea. That's why I grouped them separately.
It just seems to be very similar.
And the argument is similar, but the application is different. Okay. Many contend in practice that we do not rely on Taliyah if you're dealing with a chashud, if you're dealing with somebody who is genuinely suspected of violating Isser, right? That's a general principle. The Tosafot on Shei Shem on Hey Vav mentions it, and I brought it in, I just referenced it in your base, because again, I wasn't retyping. He says that we don't rely on Taliyah with a chashud, and his argument is very simple. He says, you're telling me I'm not sure that he's going to sin with it. And I tell you, but I'm not sure he isn't going to sin with it. And it's a D'oraisa. So therefore, if the guy is chashud, you are not allowed to rely on the Taliyah. I can't invite the guy to walk from a mile away knowing that he may drive. That's the position of the Tosafot on Shei Shem and Muki Agriv. However, others disagree and say that we are tola with a nechshad. We can rely on the tliya. We can rely on the suffix. The Bartanura takes it as a given, commenting on Perakei Mishnah Vav, the case of lending out, selling items to them, I should say. The Mishnah Rishona as well takes it as a given that we are able to rely on it. The Tosafos Yom Tov acknowledges we rely on the tliya if it is strong. He's commenting on Hey Tes. In practice, Rav Avadya does offer it as a heter. He's a little bit begrudging. But if you take a look at the language in Yud Gimel, in his sikum on this issue of the clothing store, he says, you know, it's really, really bad for people to wear this clothing. And therefore, there would be a concern about Lifnei Iver. If you have the Taliyah that some people wear these things in a permissible way, Efshar Lahatir Valimkor. He doesn't sound terribly happy, but he offers the heter, and he says, Shamei Alanu Yishkon Betach. Someone who listens to us will dwell securely, and he means to in his discouraging approach. Yeah.
Because where a Taliyah doesn't exist, say the person lives 10 miles away, there's still the overriding deraisa concern. Kulos, sina tachicha b'lovavecha. Could you say that would be overriding?
If it's a vada, he doesn't give it. The chazanish doesn't give it to you where it's a vada.
Does anyone talk about that?
Not in that sense.
There's two right.
Not in that sense. What they do bring is something different. and it's much more difficult and has to be applied by a posek. I had the following question when I was in Smicha. There was a shul in a certain small town on Long Island which didn't have a Baal Kriya. So they used to hire, those who are at YU know Tzvi Ram. So they hired Tzvi and me, and we alternated Shabbatot. We would go there, we would sleep in the shul. It was a converted house, we would sleep in the shul on Shabbos, and we would lane for them. So the way that we did it was that we then had davening in the morning, and then mincha close to the end of Shabbos, and then, I'm sorry, mincha, we had a big kiddush, and then mincha early, so that people who came for Shabbos must have stayed and davened mincha, and then Maariv was timed for 15 minutes after Shabbos, so people who would drive would at least not be driving on Shabbos Del Raisa. They should have made Abdallah first, but whatever. That was the way we had it structured. And at one point, there was a request to start a shir Shabbos afternoon. I think it was during the time of year when you couldn't do early mincha. Early mincha would have just been too late. No one was going to stick around. So the question was, we're going to do mincha before shkia. Can you do a shir between mincha and maariv? And the question I had was, if I do that, I'm encouraging people to come back. Right? People, because normally they weren't getting a minyan for mincha. So is this now going to encourage people to come back for mincha? And I asked a certain very significant rav whether I am, I didn't ask him for permission to quote it in his name, so that's why I say that, whether I could do the shir. And his answer was yes. His answer was yes because if they don't drive to shul to come to the shir, so what do you think they're doing at home? Do you think they're sitting with a sefer? they're turning on lights, or they're driving to the mall, or whatever it is that they're doing. So the argument was, maybe that's a grounds to distinguish.
I think this has the same logic as with the clothing.
It's really a different logic. It's a logic of what you're doing.
Inviting
the
Shabbos guest that lives 10 kilometers away.
Is that they're mecholos either way, whether you're causing them or somebody else is causing them. You're not necessarily making him do something anyway, and now he'll have a shir.
Is that the same concept? I forget what it's called. Chad Ibra Dinara.
It's not really Chad Ibra Dinara, because what I'm inviting him to is something he wouldn't get elsewhere in a mutter way. It's not really the same as Chad Ibra Dinara. I think it's a meta halakhic argument. I don't think that it's straightforward.
I don't know if it's a different argument. Rishol Zaman is the truth in terms of offering food to somebody that you know he's not going to make. And he makes a claim which is similar to what we're saying for the Chazanish, if not the same. That's what I'm not sure. Because his claim is that, well, you have to look at it. If you give him food, he probably is not going to make a bracha. So that's the Mishul. If you don't give him food, so then he implies the same, he's just going to resent you. Bring him over to your, who do you invite over to your house and not offer him any food?
Right.
So he's going to, resent you, and he says, he's going to hate you, he's going to support, and he...
No, I think they are giving the same argument.
And so maybe it's the same thing, and he says, well, you have to look, how do you define a mishul? He says, it's not even, because that's not a mishul, because once you start weighing the two sides, the law of Eira is giving a mishul. Well,
called a mishul.
If it's like a 5 versus a 7, so whatever is less, he says, it's not even a mishul, because in that context, it's the better of the two options.
Right, I once saw an article, I think it was Rabbi Jaffer, had an article where he collected 4 different approaches to that issue, and Rishon Zalman was one of them. But there,
I think he wrote an article on inviting guests for Shabbos. I think
that would make sense.
I think I read a lot. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Could you just say the same thing with brachot then? So you don't give them food, they're not going to starve. They're going to eat food, so it's if you give them food or
somebody else
take food from.
Yes.
The house,
so that is brought up in the discussion. That is brought up in the discussion. It's really more Masayaya than Lifnei Iver in that sense.
Oh, yeah.
The other piece that I wanted to show you is a tshuva by Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer in Yud Dalet. He's dealing with an issue of selling land to somebody, to a Jew, who is into Jainism. And there's a concern that Jainism is from India, and it is considered a bodhisattva. And the fellow you're going to sell it to has already bought land elsewhere and built a Jainist temple on it. And the question is he going to build a Jainist temple here? So in Source Yudalit, he says, Davar zemafurish laheter, benedarim samfvez mebez. He says it's an explicit Gemara nedarim. What are you bothering me for? Rav Ashi hava leahu ahu iba. Rav Ashi had a forest. Yeah, it's an iba, not an iba. Because he didn't sell his father. Zavne lebei nura. He sold it to a place where they create fires for Avodah Zarah. So Amalei Ravina Ravashi, Ha'ika Lifnei Iver L'Sidei Mechshol. So he says, hey, way. That's a favor. That's what you said. That's not what people normally use wood for. Wood is not normally used for the Avodah Zarah. Wood is normally used for a fire, for kindling, for light, for heat, whatever it is. The place he's selling it to is not a base Avodah Zarah. It's a place where they provide kindling that gets used for purposes like that. So that's the Gemara, and the Meiri comments on it. He says you're not allowed to provide for Ovdei Avodah Zarah that which is suitable for service for the Avodah Zarah. Right, that's the idea we talked about with Lavona last week. Same issue.
Is the Beit Nor, it's a store that they're selling?
It's a place that I think it's a warehouse for kindling. I think that's what we're talking about.
Would have been leaf-based.
Maybe. So he says you're not allowed to provide. That shekol she'efshir shelo yizdam nulo ela al yado nimtza over al lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol. Because if it is possible that this would not come up, I'm sorry. It's possible that if he wouldn't have the means for his Avodah Zarah, you're providing it, you're violating Lifnei Iver. But if you could argue that it could be done in a permitted way, then we are told that Kol Sharov Osan HaInyanim Bekach, where most of their affairs are done that way, in the permitted way. Most potential outcomes are permitted. Bushamo came Ravashi, and that's what Ravashi said in the discussion over here regarding the forest. That was his point. So he says the same thing is true regarding the fellow who wants to build the Janus temple, maybe. You don't know that. Most people, when they buy land, don't use it to build a temple for their Avodah Zarah. So on that basis, he says we can be Tola. That's the... So the answer is that's not enough to override this... This potential leniency. That's what he says. You see it black and white. That brings us to our last case, which I'm going to do a little bit quickly in the interest of time. But it's the big question about Misaya. Misaya again is the Derabbanan. In addition to not causing people to stumble, I'm not supposed to help people to sin. Even if Lifnei Iver will not necessarily apply, I might have a concern for Misaya. So here, I'm working from an article by Rav Shlomo Warman, Olav HaShalom, in the journal Hadarom, which is put out by the RCA. It's volumes, it's one volume, but it's Samaches Samet Samachtes. They published it every 2 years at that point, I think. In which he notes an apparent contradiction between the positions of Tosfos regarding applying Misayaya. The question is this. We have said that Lifnei Iver does not apply in the event that the Avera was accessible to the guy elsewhere. Right, that's the rule. Lifnei Iver won't apply if the Aveira was accessible to him somewhere else. Will that also knock out Misayaya? Will I say Misayaya doesn't apply if the Aveira was available to him somewhere else? That's the question. And it seems to be a machlokas between Tosfos and Tosfos. On the one hand, Tosfos in the Gemara in Shabbos talks about the concern for Lifnei Iver in the event that I am standing inside, somebody sticks his hand into my house and I put something in his hand that he then takes out. So Tosfos there, discussing that, says that even if the item was accessible to the guy on his own, so therefore it wasn't Lifnei Iver, it is Misayaya if I put it into his hand. You follow? That's what Tosfos in Shabbos Daf Gimel Amud Aleph writes. It's Source Tesvav. And it makes sense based on the Ran. The Ran in Source Tezayin explains the whole origin of the prohibition against Misayaya is to say, if I have a mitzvah of keeping people from sinning, how in the world would I be justified in helping them to sin? That doesn't make any sense. So from that perspective, I would say that even if it's not Lifnei Iver, I didn't cause him to stumble because the stumbling block was there already, nonetheless, it's prohibited as Misayaya. However, Rav Warman and others, it's not just him, the Shagas Aryeh and his Terei Evin as well, see Tosfos implying something different in a couple of other locations. The truth is that I didn't think the Tosfos' statements were so 100% clear in this regard, but he quotes you Tosfos in Kiddushin Daf Nun Vav, as well as Tosfos above Mitziah in Hayamud Beis, to argue that no, Misayaya does not apply. The case in the Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Nun Vav is talking about buying an animal with Meiser Sheni money outside of Yerushalayim. You're not allowed to do that for a variety of reasons beyond the scope of our discussion right now. You're not allowed to buy an animal with Meiser Sheni, a live animal, Meiser Sheni money outside of Yerushalayim. The question then is, what about the person who sells it to you? And he's violating Lifnei Iver. And Tosfos there challenges Rashi. Rashi indicts the merchant who sells him this either food he'll eat outside of Yerushalayim or sells him the animal. And Tosfos challenges and says, that's entirely fine to do that, since there are other places he could have gotten it. You're not the only merchant around. So the implication is that not only is it not Lifnei Iver, but it's also not Misayeya. He has a similar discussion above Mitzia and Hamad Beis. The question is, if somebody lends money to somebody else and charges interest, is he violating Misayeya? Or the guarantor violating Misayeya? Or the witnesses violating Misayeya? And it's implied also by Tosfos and Avodah Zarah above Hamad Beis, by the Rosh and Avodah Zarah Aleph Beis. So I have an apparent contradiction between Tosfos and Tosfos. So the resolutions, he offers three resolutions. Resolution number one is that the problem is only a problem, Misayeya is only an issue if you help during the Isser itself. Like the Mishnah in Shvi'a said, that I am allowed to sell them, kitchen equipment they might use to grind up and sift Shemitah flour, but I'm not allowed to actually grind with them. That's a little bit of a problem, because the Mishnah needed to invoke Darkei Shalom in order to permit me to lend them these items. It didn't just say, well, it's okay because it's not a problem. It said, we need Darkei Shalom. The Ksav Sofer notes that and offers a potential solution in Source Chaf Aleph. That maybe that's different because there it's really a fundamental type of assistance you're providing when you give them these kalim. Maybe that's a different story. But that's in any case, that's one approach. It's not Misayeya if I'm helping before the event. The Shach in Yoredeya, which we mentioned at the beginning of the Shir, said that the Heter is only where it's a Mumar. A Mumar is somebody who has already abandoned everything. So I'm not instructed to keep him from sinning. The Ron's concern doesn't apply. The Dogel Meravava, writing in Yerodeh Kufnun Aleph, goes even further. And he said it's not only a Mumar, but anybody who violates intentionally, Misayeya is not an issue. That's a Dogel Meravava's stance, which is really a very strong statement. And then the Nitziv gives me the third potential resolution. And he says that he's talking about the case of marrying off a couple where you know that they're not going to observe Taharas HaMishpacha. So he says that it's okay where you're being paid to marry them off. Where it's Darkei Shalom. He argues that which is needed for Kedei Chayav, for the sake of living, is okay, based on a Gemara in Gittin, Daf Samach Beis Amud Aleph. And he says, therefore, that whether it's for Parnasa or for Darkei Shalom, it will be justified. The bottom line out of all of this, and I know I raced through that entirely too quickly, and I apologize, but Shir next week has to move on to Shemitah of money, or we'll never get to it. The upshot of all of this is the following, to say this more clearly. I have Tosfos on the one hand saying that if the guy could have done it himself anyway, there's still a prohibition against assisting him in sinning. And then I have Tosfos saying that no, if the guy could have gotten himself anyway, even Misayeya is not a concern. So one answer is to say they're dealing with two different types of cases. Where you help during the Isser, it's Misayeya. If it's not during the Isser, it's permitted. A second approach is two different cases. The Heter is where it's a Mumar. If the guy was going to do it anyway, which Dogel Meravava says, anytime he was going to do it intentionally, then my assistance is not an Isser. That's the way that he takes it. And then you have the Nitziv, who says that it's mutter any time it is something that helps you, whether with your parnasa or whether Darkei Shalom, then it will be allowed. Yes?
For the Heter, for a Mumar, does that just mean that, like, Meseya is not an issue for anyone who's not from? And wouldn't that just be, like, in general, when Meseya would be an issue, it would usually be for someone who's not from?
Right, so not necessarily. The reason I say not necessarily is because keep in mind, even if I take it down as Dogel Meravava did from Mumar, Mumar means the guy's living the life. He is completely out. The Dogel Meravava takes anyone who's amazed, right? But that still leaves, for us, Bizman Hazeh, a whole bunch of people who we don't consider amazed.
Because, even intentional sinners.
Right. either because you take the approach that they're Tinok Shenishpa, they don't know any better, or because I say that they're Omer Mutter, that they actually honestly think this is okay to do, and the rabbis are crazy with all these things that they've added onto the Torah. Whichever approach they're going to take to justify themselves, they're not mazed.
So by that, for that heter wouldn't apply to like your average not from Toronto.
Correct.
Jew.
Correct.
That would be like maybe 200 years ago, but not.
Maybe not even then, but yes, that is correct.
Okay.
That is correct. But the heter that would be the Netziv's heter. Darkei Shalom / Parnasa. In practice, the Avnei Miluim in the Turei Evan, it's weird, it's in the Turei Evan, but it's in brackets, says at the end, Avnei Miluim. In Chagiga Yigim Alamad Aleph, it's source Chavhei, indeed sides with the view that says that it's not even Misayaya. If the thing is accessible to him, it is not considered to be Misayaya. So the upshot of everything we've said, and then I want to turn off the recorder for one last case I want to tell you about that's Kedai to know, but the... But first of all, we asked about the Am Haaretz when it came to Shemitah, right? We asked the question about the Am Haaretz when it came to Shemitah. Is he Chashud or not? We said that it is indeed a Machlokes between the Rambam and other Rishonim. We said that regarding an unknown person, if I'm going to give him Shemitah produce or give him Shemitah money, I need to make sure that they're going to be used properly. That was point one. Point two, am I allowed to rely on a suffek versus lifnei iver when providing an item to a chashud? Can I be tola when the guy is a chashud? And we said that there are four different explanations possible for why you can rely on suffek. Right? Whether that's because it's not called lifnei iver if you don't know he'll sin, or because it's not really a deoraisa. In general, this isn't a deoraisa, the whole lifnei iver thing here, of causing him to sin in this way, or because Talia only works with Chadibra Denahara, in which case it's not a De'oraisa, or the Chazanish's position that being Machmir on this suffix will just lead me to create other types of Mechshol, other types of stumbling block. However, others that's in terms of that. Some contend that we are not allowed to rely on a suffix with a Chashud. Others disagree and say we are allowed to rely on the suffix. Rav Avadya does offer it as a begrudging heter. In the case of the clothing store, and Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer takes it as a given that one is allowed to be tola in the case of selling the land for the Jainist temples. When we said that Chadibra Denara, the sin is already available, so therefore Lifnei Iver doesn't apply, can I apply that also to say that Misayaya won't apply? So Rav Warman identifies a machlokes between Tosos and Tosos in this regard. And we said that maybe Misayaya will not apply if I'm helping before the Isser. Right, like the case of selling him the airline ticket. It's not Shabbos yet, he's not traveling yet. Or maybe where the guy is a mazid, right, whatever mazid means, or where it's for my parnasa and for a Darkei Shalom, it will be allowed. Where I am benefiting from it, it would actually be allowed. My intention is not to help him sin, my intention is to help myself. Those are the three heterim which lead him in practice to permit the airline, the travel agent, to sell a Shabbos travel ticket to a Jew. Okay, so just one other.